You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. Let's do this thing. Yesterday, we told you it was the dog days of winter and nothing was going on. Once again, I was wrong. There's a hell of a lot of stuff going on. A blockbuster NBA deal earlier today. We're going to break that down as the Toronto Raptors. We're looking to add a big man and a power forward. Well, they added one of the best big man power forwards in the NBA, although he's more of a hybrid. Serge Ibaka right now. Like everybody else, he wants to shoot the three right now. But nevertheless, we're talking about a guy that can protect the rim a little bit, a good shot blocker, physical presence, big move by the Toronto Raptors. We're going to break that down. Dane Malinsky will step up and in. The professor, straight from the strip in Las Vegas, Nevada, pregame.com's Dane Malinsky. We're going to run the gauntlet, Will Dave. We'll talk a little bit about the trade. We'll talk some college basketball. The NIT is a couple of interesting rule changes for their upcoming tournament. And for those of you that pay attention, yes, we love to bet on the NIT. NIT is a lot like the CFL. You know, in the 70s, dudes actually used to willingly go to the CFL instead of the NFL. Like, they would willingly do it. It was like a similar situation with the NIT tournament. In the old days, teams would willingly go to the NIT instead of the NCAA. They reduced the shot clock in college basketball. That started with the NIT tournament. Sort of like the NHL and the AHL. They test out like potential rule changes in the NIT tournament, and it should be pretty cool. We're going to break that down with Malinsky. The NCAA committee, selection committee, wants more transparency. Really, they want people to talk about it. They already have their polls, but now, of course, the NCAA for the first time showed us their top 16 bracket, which is pretty interesting. Is there an angle that can help us with what they're showing us as far as picking a team who's going to win the tournament? So Dave Malinsky steps up in it. Paul Bovey talks NBA basketball. We'll hit the trade. We only got three games on tap tonight in the association, but we'll break them all down in their entirety with Mr. Paul Bovey, VegasInsider.com's Paul Bovey. Meanwhile, pitchers and catchers are set to report. They've already started to show up at some locations, but for the most part, I believe it's like today, tomorrow, over the next couple of days. Nevertheless, we begin our Major League Baseball coverage. I know other people in the network have done a great job breaking it down from a fantasy standpoint. We're a little late to the party, but it's never too late to talk to a World Series champion and a two-time All-Star pitcher. Los Angeles, Anaheim, California Angels, of whatever the hell they're called. Mark Kubica will step up and join us. Longtime Kansas City Royals standout, 20-game winner, World Series champion. Mark normally joins us a couple of times a season. Look forward to Mark Kubica on the program today. He bats leadoff. We're going to continue our baseball coverage on a daily basis leading up to the Major League Baseball regular season, which I'm fired up for. So yesterday I told you that we're in the dog days of winter right now. Literally and figuratively, as the Westminster Kettle Dog Show has begun. We're kind of in a nowhere's land in the college basketball world. NBA, it's All-Star Week. NHL, NHL's all about the playoffs. You know, the Masters are around the corner. The start of the Major League Baseball season is around the corner. But it's sort of a Twilight Zone gray area right now. But fortunately, the sporting gods have given us something to break down. And that something is Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather. Now, this has been talked about often, and more so by Conor McGregor calling out Floyd Mayweather. And the UFC and UFC fighters have used, quite successfully, I might add, Floyd Mayweather as a internet publicity magnet. Anytime, Dana would often call out Floyd Mayweather. Ronda Rousey could beat Floyd Mayweather. Oh, Conor McGregor could beat Floyd Mayweather. Well, Dana White's got to be careful what he wishes for, because now Conor McGregor believes he can beat Floyd Mayweather. Or does he? I don't believe that Conor McGregor thinks he has a hope in hell against Floyd Mayweather in a boxing ring, all right? If they fought in a UFC octagon, then Conor McGregor wins the fight. It's as simple as that. But people are confusing Conor McGregor's popularity with his actual athletic prowess, so to speak. Floyd Mayweather is on a completely different level. He's on another planet than Conor McGregor is. I'm going to give Conor McGregor credit for talking his way into this thing, but even though Conor McGregor just announced this morning that he's come to terms, basically, with Floyd Mayweather to throw it down, the report also says that it's not complete because there's a third party who are stalling things. Yeah, I wonder who that third party is. Is it the Democratic Party? Is it Donald Trump and the Republicans? No. It's the UFC. There's no way in hell that Dana White is going to allow Conor McGregor to fight Floyd Mayweather unless he's getting a large-ass chunk of this thing, unless he's promoting it, or at least co-promoting it. And there's an even bigger chance of not happening that Floyd Mayweather is going to want to share any of the money with Dana White, somebody that he doesn't like. You know, Floyd Mayweather, unlike Conor McGregor, is not under contract to the UFC. So if he's not under contract to the UFC and already has $600 million, and even though his fights are boring as hell, he knows he can make $50 to $100 million on any given time that he steps into the damn ring, why is he just going to say, oh yeah, you know, I'll do this for the fun of it? Floyd Mayweather wouldn't fight Conor McGregor unless he knew he was going to beat him, and he would beat him. And for the record, odds makers are saying that Floyd Mayweather is like a minus 1,300 favorite in this fight. You know, the fact of the matter is, Conor McGregor doesn't care. You know, Conor McGregor doesn't care. If Conor McGregor gets beat up for 12 rounds, which he would, I don't even know if Floyd would knock him out. He doesn't knock anybody out. But let's say he dominates. You think Floyd Floyd will just do what he does. You know, Floyd's fought tougher sparring partners, man. It's freaking ridiculous. You know, but Conor McGregor, he can make $25 million in one night as opposed to making $25 million in like 3 or 4 years in the UFC. I get it. But you're under contract, dude. You can't just tell, oh, yeah, I'm going to go fight. Now, this is going to end up in court. There's a better chance it ends up in court under the Muhammad Ali Act because Conor McGregor does have a boxing license right now. And we don't have time to get into the Ali Act and what that means. What it means is Conor could end up in court, challenge the UFC and say they're violating the Ali Act. Yet, Conor McGregor, you might have a lot of fancy cars and stuff like that. You own cars. The UFC own garages, all right? We're talking, you know, they own Hollywood, all right? The UFC have a little bit deeper pockets than you. They've been around before you, and they're going to be around after you. You know, not only will you not be able to beat Floyd Mayweather, you're not going to be able to beat Dana White and company in a court of law either. They'll stall you out. They'll ruin your career. And you know what? The notorious one will be the unknown one when it's all said and done. If they did fight, it's easy money on Floyd. Everybody will bet on Conor. The line will come down, and Floyd will probably bet like $22 million on himself. But ultimately, this fight never freaking happens. The only fight you're going to see is in a damn court. What do you think? Game Time Decisions continues. Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. As I stated off the top of the program, today will be our first day of Major League Baseball coverage. Today we hit the Angels. Mark Gubiza is going to join us, former Kansas City Royal and Anaheim Angel or California Angel or I don't know, whatever angel that he was. They change the name every couple of years there. But he's now the television analyst. So he's on top of things. Pitchers and catchers report tomorrow for the Halos. So we'll talk Halo baseball. Steve Lyons joins me tomorrow. We'll talk some Dodgers baseball. Mike Cardano was going to join us. We were going to talk some Metropolitan, some Yankee baseball, but Mike's under the weather. Shout out to Mike. He's actually in a hospital. I should have told the guys. We should have got the picture up. But Mike actually sent me a picture. He's in the hospital. He said, yeah, I got a vicious flu. I'm actually hospitalized. And there's a picture of him in a hospital bed. And I told him, I swear, they don't have phones in the hospital there. He's like, really? Skype it up from the hospital room. Come on, Mike. Mike's getting soft. But in all sincerity, shout out to our boy Cardano. Hope that he's feeling better. He's all right. So we'll talk some Met and Yankee at baseball. We got Matt Modica on the radar this week as well. So as I said, we got Mark Gubiza. We got Paul Bovey. We're going to talk NBA basketball in a couple of minutes. Let's bring in Dave Malinsky right now. You can read his daily column over at pregame.com. The professor, Dave Malinsky. We're going to talk about a ton of stuff with Dave. What's going on, Dave?
You know, let's talk about Mark Gubis at first, because here's something that a lot of, in fact, you in particular might not be able to appreciate, is how good Gubis is, because starting in a couple of weeks, get into early April, that's my evening for most of the summer. Gubis is so good on these Angel broadcasts. Again, people on the East Coast would have already gone to bed. They wouldn't appreciate just how good he is, but Gubis is a treat for those of us on the West Coast.
Great, great analyst. And you know who else is great? And unfortunately, he can still do games, but he's reducing the workload a little bit, is Kruko and the San Francisco crew. They do a great job, too. I'm a Dodger fan, and I say that. Real pleasure to watch a Giants game.
Yeah, of course. Now, the one thing you know from your time being here in Las Vegas, we are probably the single most penalized target area.
It's terrible.
In all of Major League Baseball, because guess what? I don't get to see the Giants. I don't get to see the A's. I don't get to see the Diamondbacks. I don't get to see the Dodgers. The only broadcasts we get are Angels and Padres at night because of the old MLB blackout policies. It's absurd. I've written a letter to Major League Baseball every year for 29 years. Say, you know, why don't they get up to speed 2017? And it looks like, Gabe, they finally are about to address it. They just got some old, archaic antitrust notions out there. But the good side of that is we get to listen to Gubis, and that makes up for the rest.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Like, what are you, in Vegas? You're supposed to drive to Chavez Ravine to see the game? And as you stay in Vegas, for people aren't aware, you're in the blackout zone of everybody. Like, somehow San Francisco, like San Diego, Oakland, everybody. Like, just everyone in the state of California and Arizona. It is freaking, ridiculous. So, Dave, a ton of stuff that I want to get to here with you. I look forward to the start of the Major League Baseball season. I know you begin your baseball prep right after the NBA All-Star game. We've been anxious for some numbers, and the Atlantis came out with some, but we'll get to that in a minute. But a lot of stuff to get to here, Dave. So let's start off first with this NCAA bracket that they released. I didn't know they were going to be doing this. It kind of caught me off guard when I saw this. So they released the top four seeds. They're 16 right now, Dave. Do you like it? Do you like what they do? And is there an advantage for future bettors getting a look at this bracket right now and seeing what they're doing?
See, that's the window, is it does give future bettors a little insight. I like it compared to college football because they didn't make it into this big, drawn-out media event. They just said, here's the list.
Yeah.
That's it. No commentary, nothing else. They didn't try to make money off of it. But it does give us a little bit of an insight out there so that we can see teams that may be a little undervalued, maybe teams that are overvalued. But also, here's what it does, Gabe. It lets the coaches and players see.
Yeah.
So now here comes a little bit of urgency. Here's Purdue taking the court tonight, knowing that, hey, you know what? We think we're the best team in the Big Ten. They don't have us in the top 16. We have some work to do. So some of those that are just outside of that 16 are teams we may look to play on.
And, you know, Baylor losing last night to Texas Tech is something that they're going to be taking a look at. Is Baylor's a one seed right now? Is Baylor a justifiable one seed to you?
No, Baylor's only about a three.
Yeah,
for me. I mean, Baylor has played terrific basketball. But again, part of this is the Vegas mentality, too. I think Baylor has already played as well as that team is capable of playing. Some of these other teams, Villanova, they're just ramping up. They know the tournament's ahead. Your North Carolinas, just ramping up. Tournament's ahead. Some of these other teams haven't played at a peak yet. Baylor already has.
Gonzaga, the thing that caught my eye here was Gonzaga. But one thing, Dave, I want to ask you before I get to Gonzaga, too, with the bracket, if you guys can put the bracket back up. These are just the seeds that they see. It doesn't automatically mean that these teams are going to be in the same region, right, Dave?
Yeah, this is just it's the tournament committee's way of saying if the tournament started right now, and one of the things I think people can understand for perspective on Gonzaga, that went out on Saturday before the St. Mary's game. That St. Mary's game by itself might have been enough to move them up a slot or two because now that becomes a quality road win. So just that one game might have bumped them up a bit, but it's a frozen moment in time what the tourney would have been as of Saturday afternoon.
Dave, one thing I brought up this off the top of the program was the NIT. And I remember you and I discussed this a couple of years ago when they reduced the shot clock. And we had an initial bump of overs a little bit, but it caught up. The number caught up pretty quick in the NIT tournament. But I like how they use the NIT tournament somewhat as a test pattern for potential rule changes at the NCAA level. Now, from what I understand, there's not a huge demand among coaches or anything like that to disband the two 20-minute halves. But the NIT will play four 10-minute quarters as opposed to two 20-minute halves. Kind of changes the foul perspective a little bit, and we don't have time to get into every aspect of that right now, though, Dave. But it's interesting that NCAA basketball, the only basketball league generally in the world that plays 20-minute halves. I mean, even high school does the 10-minute quarters, Dave.
Yeah, I think it's terrible, though, because here's the problem, and it's where college basketball got ruined a long time ago. Those automatic media timeouts at 16, 12, 8, and 4.
Terrible. Hate them.
Those are pretty long stoppages. So now, what's the NIT going to do? They're going to add another one.
Yeah.
So you're going to get a stoppage at 16, a stoppage at 12, which now becomes the 2-minute warning, and then a stoppage 2 minutes later.
So what do they do at 10 minutes then? So is it going to be a stoppage at like 6 and then a stoppage at 2 again?
I haven't seen that yet. What they're supposed to do, if they're going to go to 10 minutes, one stoppage. Stoppage at 5. That's it. If you cut some of the media timeouts out, you get such a better basketball
flow. If they just cut one of them out, Dave, you're right. The 16, 12, 8, and 4 thing's brutal. The other day, too, I was watching the Canes play, Larinaga. The guy kept calling timeouts, Dave, 6 seconds before the TV timeout. Like, I don't know why he was doing it. It was like, really, dude? You're really going to do this? But he didn't like the right timeout. So you get one sequence, and then they automatically, because you know, if you're unaware at home, they automatically go to timeouts at the 16, 12, 8, and 4 mark at the first stoppage. It is kind of bizarre. And to be honest with you, Dave, I agreed with the shot clock move, but to me, this just confuses things. And there's too much you have to think about with the fouls and everything now as well.
Yeah, the NIT wants to put some new hybrid foul rules into play that I think are only going to cause confusion. That aren't real. That's one of these. It's not broke. Don't fix that part. But yeah, maybe 10 minutes quarters is better if it means we eliminate some of the timeouts. It's those stoppages in play that make for such disjointed basketball. Essentially, it's a little bit longer than a hockey shift, but these kids go out and play for 4 minutes at a time, and then there comes a break, and you just get way too many disruptions.
Yeah, you know what? Smart coaches, actually, Dave, and you know, when it comes tournament time and stuff, they basically play in mini games. You know, you approach it like that. They're 4 minutes spurts. Like, you tell the kids, we don't have to hang with them for 40 minutes, all right? We hang for them for 4 minutes at a time, essentially, and you break it down, and you and I have talked about it. Some teams a little slow inbounding the ball. That's another thing that drives me crazy, but it's a good point. We just save college basketball. Leave it the way it is. The 20-minute halves are fine, but just eliminate one of those automatics. Just make it three. Make it three. It'll make all the difference in the world, and in fact, Dave, the NFL's looking at this for next year, actually, in which they want to get their commercials down. They're looking at like not going to a commercial after the kickoffs and stuff, and something they're going to have to think about. Because the athletes are good, but the games are just boring because there's too many commercial breaks.
Yeah, it's the problem is you're actually changing the sport, and that's when you do it wrong. College basketball changed the sport when they introduced those media timeouts. In the NFL, would you naturally have a 2-minute break after a team kicks off? No.
No.
So you're actually changing the sport to suit dollars and cents. And yeah, we know that they got to make money to pay the bills. They're making money for entirely different reasons. They're making a hell of a lot more than they need to. Don't screw with the structure of the sport.
I've been saying this for years. Go with the European format. You know, go to commercials a couple of times, but have a compromise if you're Goodell. You tell Budweiser and everyone, listen, we're not going to as many breaks, but we're going to put up your ad in the corner of the screen during the game. Yeah, people would listen. live with that. It amazes me that we haven't got to this point yet. All right, so tonight, Dave, Kentucky in a revenge spot against Tennessee. Tennessee have actually been pretty good on the road. 4-4 is pretty good for a college team on the highway. 5-3 against the spread. It was 82-80 the first time out. What do you make of this one? Is it feels a little high to me. I don't really like this game, but I wanted to ask you about it. I don't trust Kentucky laying 14, and I don't really want Tennessee. If I had to take it, I would take the dog.
Yeah, I mean, here's the problem with Kentucky is you don't get a whole lot of experience in revenge games. Essentially, Fox and Monk will have two revenge games their entire career, this one and the Florida game. They've had an issue, though. They are talented enough to build big leads, but not to hold on to them. They don't have the concentration level. They don't have the defensive tenacity. Kentucky could play real well and still win by 10 or 11 because Tennessee is going to be able to score from behind. Kentucky doesn't have the mentality to close the back door.
Dave, we've got about 90 seconds left here. Today's column over pregame.com is about Tom Izzo's Michigan State Spartans. And a lot of people, I mean, they usually start off slow and they usually have a brutal schedule. Izzo actually apologized to his team for the schedule this year. Everyone's been waiting for that switch. I mean, what, they made the tournament, is it 19 consecutive years with Michigan State? Kind of on the bubble right now, Dave, but they, you know, they seem to be, like Bill Parcells says, you know, you are what your record says you are after 25 games of college basketball play. They're laying 7 tonight, another tricky game here tonight against the Buckeyes. Tough to trust either side.
Yeah, the caution here with Michigan State, and you're going to hear the announcers on ESPN say, okay, it's Izzo time. It's February. Here's his record. This isn't an Izzo team. Where Michigan State succeeded in the past is being very tough inside on defense, being the best offensive rebounding team in the nation so many times. This is a smaller, quicker team. They've got 3 freshmen starting. They don't have a natural center. So right now, they're sitting in the lower half of the Big Ten in defense, and they're near the bottom. They're number 12 in offensive rebounding. So it's not the typical, okay, let's flip the switch. It's February. This is a different team. Izzo's got to coach them differently. We don't want to get caught making the old false assumptions.
Dave, it's always a pleasure. I look forward to starting to talk some baseball with you in the coming weeks. NBA trade deadline, very interesting. Ibaka to the Raptors already. Maybe that might be the biggest move, actually, of them all to come. Yet it should be an active deadline. Ton of stuff coming up. It's always a pleasure, Dave.
Hey, good luck, everybody.
Dave Malinsky, pregame.com. Read his column. It'll make you smarter. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're talking baseball. We're talking basketball. All that and more. Mark Gubazon, Paul Bovey coming up next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Thanks to the professor, Dave Malinsky, for joining us on the program. And as Dave alluded to, one of his favorite Major League Baseball analysts is Mark Gubazon. It's a strange twilight zone in Las Vegas as far as games being blacked out. And, you know, Gubazon's great. We're very excited. A lot of Angel fans around, actually, that were excited on Twitter that Mark was coming on the program as well. We've got a KC Royal hat in honor of Yordano Ventura, and of course Mark Gubazon, a World Series champion with the Kansas City Royals. Mark Gubazon joins us, Angels Anaheim and Anaheim Angels television analyst. I always butcher the name, Mark. How you doing, Mark?
Hey, Gabe, how's it going, man? Hey, it's always cool when they give a little shout out there in Vegas too, because I know we're on all our games out there along with, you know, Southern California and stuff, but out in Vegas and Hawaii, it's pretty cool when they're able to catch our games.
Yeah, no, it is, and as you stated, you know, you guys have a lot of fans. The Angels have a lot of fans in Vegas. A lot of fans everywhere, actually. And it's funny because, you know, I used to do the Expos pregame or postgame in the final years. And I grew up in Montreal. Loved the Expos, but always had a soft spot in my heart for the Angels as well. They were sort of like the Expos of the American League in the West Coast. Bill Stoneman, Orlando Cabrera, Vladimir Guerrero. So there's a ton of Expo fans. After the Expos left, they didn't become national fans. fans. They hate the Nationals. They actually became Angel fans.
Well, that's cool because, you know what, anytime you can put those names on a franchise like they did when they moved over to the Angels, you're going to be able to bring those fans from Montreal and Canada out to the Angels. And, you know, being around Vlad as long as I was and Bill Stoneman, still see him all the time. They're such great people. And, you know, like I said, if any way you can expand, you know, the Angel fan base, whether it's from the California to Canada, like we mentioned, Vegas, Hawaii, wherever it is, it's cool, especially when you have the best player in the world on the team in Mike Trout.
Yeah, you know, and Vladimir Guerrero, as well as you stated, I mean, you know, you were a big leaguer. You know about the egos that can exist, especially with today's athletes and the mega money that they make. But there's very few people that I've met in baseball. Like, I'll be honest, a lot of the stars are kind of jerks, like, you know. There are very few people I've met in baseball as good as Vladimir was and as much of a nice guy as he was at the same time. Like, in Montreal, dude, his mother lived next door to him. Like, his cousins were there. You know, like, he was his kid, who's now in the Blue Jay organization, was in the dugout with him every day. Really just like a real humble, nice guy.
Oh, no doubt. And even when he was with the Angels, his mom traveled a lot, and like players like Meister, Storrs, Eric Ibar used to always have meals with us. She would cook. They would have that little suite in the hotel, and it was so much fun. And you know, his smile, unbelievable. And you know, it's a shame that you know the baseball wasn't able to market that smile even more so than they did. I mean, we all know what he could do with the baseball bat and the glove and a throw and all that stuff, but his smile was unbelievable.
Yeah, I don't think
he'll be in the Hall of Fame, by the way. Should be in the Hall of Fame next year, but should be in there now.
Yeah, and you know, us Expos fans wanted to be an Expo. It's kind of, he said he's leading with the Angels now, Mark.
You know what? Everyone always says those things, but I guess when the time comes, we'll have to wait and see. But any way you look at it, be able to play for the Expos, play for the Angels, you know, obviously the Rangers too, but just to know him and say that we got a chance to watch him in person and he's in the Hall and will be in the Hall of Fame at some point, it's a blast.
What about like Tim Raines? He just got into the Hall. There was an interleague play earlier in your career, your thoughts that you faced Tim Raines. What was your thoughts on Tim Raines finally getting into the Hall of Fame?
I thought it was long overdue, and we follow each other on Twitter and keep in touch as much as possible. I faced him when he's with the White Sox, no doubt, and just maybe not much below Ricky Henderson as far as a guy that you know could do so many things. I mean, you talk about as soon as he was on base, you're already scratching your head. So, well, why don't you just go head over to third base at this point? You know, get it over with. So I don't have to make any throws at first and watch the catcher throw into the outfield. He was that disruptive. He had good power, solid defender. But you know, again, when you see guys like Tim Raines make the Hall of Fame, you know it's great for the game because not only he was a Hall of Fame player, but even better a person. And just he had an opportunity to have conversations with him, and his love for the game is you know unreal. And every chance he has to talk about how much fun he had playing it, and still loves being around it, it's fantastic.
I'm looking around spring training as pitchers and catchers are set to report, and there's very few camps that, you know, spring training is as important as it is to the Halos, in my opinion. You know, you've got position battles coming in here, and specifically from a pitching perspective, very, very interesting. We have somebody trying to come back, and, you know, speaking of the Expos, Alice Valentine admitted to me once, because I was never the same after I broke my cheekbone. I got hit in the face. I really wasn't the same in a batter's box, and we'll see how Matt can adjust to this. He says psychologically he's fine, and he doesn't feel the fear. We have Garrett Richards coming off of stem cell therapy, as opposed to Tommy John, which is a very interesting route, I think, to take as well. So where do we start? Let's start off with Matt's comeback right now, and let's talk about the pitching staff a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think really when you look at the key to the Angels' success this year, and I think they're really going to be one of those surprise teams in baseball, if indeed their pitching staff is healthy. And I'll start with Matt Shoemaker. I had a chance to interview him just before he went home to Michigan during the offseason. Doing the game and seeing that line drive back, it was 105 miles off the bat of Kyle Seager, and boy, I'll tell you what, it was really scary. But having my conversation with him, and knowing how difficult it was for him even to get an opportunity to play in the big leagues, he signed as a free agent. And, you know, and then he had a battle and persevere just to even get a chance to get a look at.
Yeah.
And, you know, he almost won Rookie of the Year. And then, you know, he's a tough kid. 29 years old, I think, right, 2029. But he, I have no doubt he'll figure out a way. That first batter is always the first and most difficult one. I got my leg broken by Paul Molitor. My first pitch I threw the following spring, Doug Glanville hit a line drive just by the same leg it got broke. So you just say, well, you know what, didn't hit me. I'm going to make sure the hitters aren't comfortable in the batter's box. And that's exactly what Shue's going to probably do. You know, when you go to Garrett Richards, you know, he was throwing the ball unbelievably well in, you know, in the end of his season while going through his rehab. Our elbow is extremely strong. There, you know, Mike Socha and Charles Nagy have to be real careful as far as the workload, but I think his elbow is about as sound as it's going to be, and I think it's only going to get better as he gets stronger down there as far as throwing.
So there's also a ton of veteran arms battling for spots in the rotation right now. Bud Norris, Tyler Skaggs, Jesse Chavez. How do you think this plays out? And from what I hear, it looks like Skaggs has a real chance being in this rotation. How do you think it plays out? Maybe even a Petit works his way into this. How do you think it plays out, Mark?
Yeah, I think Tyler Skaggs has some tremendous upside, Gabe. You know, a tall, strong lefty battling back from Tommy John. He had a couple of seasons ago. He had some bright spots in his comeback last season. Just a matter of getting strong. And he's definitely a number two, number three guy at the very worst in your rotation, if not a potential number one guy. So I think he's going to have a very good season. You know, Ricky Nolasco, when he came over for the Minnesota Twins, his last, I think, six or seven starts, ERA barely two, if not below it. I mean, he figured it out. He worked with Charles Nagy as far as getting a little two-seam sinking fastball, got a lot of quick ground ball outside, had a complete game in which he threw under 100 pitches. So I think he's the guy certainly going to be part of the rotation. Chavez, you mentioned him. You know, they have some strength. They have Alex Meyer, who's about 6'9", throws about 98 miles an hour. Again, had a couple starts last year. Doesn't have a lot of professional starts in his career because he's still a young guy just trying to stay healthy, but a fantastic fastball, real good curveball and change. So the competition's there. It also, like I mentioned, it all starts with Garrett Richards, and definitely after that, Skaggs, Shoemaker, and Nolasco. Then it's anytime you have, you know, those kind of battles for a number five spot, it's good for an organization. Whether it's going to be at the major league level or potentially at the AAA level.
All right, let's talk about the offense a little bit. We know all about Mike Trout, obviously, but I tell you what, for a player that's supposedly done, Albert Pujols still puts up some pretty big numbers, Mark.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Like, for a guy like
RBI.
Yeah, a guy that's done hit 76 home runs in the last 2 years with 214 RBIs. You know, if that's done, then you know, I'd like to see him. Like, he's still putting up monster numbers right now, yet, you know, around the fantasy world, everyone's always, they act like he's 72 years old, and we have a similar situation right now where, yeah, he's going to be in a tough spot coming right out of the gate, you know, only being ready right around opening day type of deal, but he's such a professional hitter that he's shown he can do this in the past before. What can you tell us about Albert? What do you expect from him?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're right, Gabe. So many people love to criticize his contract, but you know what? It is what it is. He signed that long-term deal, the 10-year, with $240 million. But his numbers are still pretty darn good. And when you mention that 119 RBI last year, and he's thinking about playing the last 2 months of the year with that, you know, the foot injury that, you know, you mentioned he'll be ready to go maybe at the beginning of the season. Everyone always doubts he's going to be ready, and he's always ready at the beginning of the season. So I expect him to be so. And no one works harder. He's only a few home runs away from 600 career home runs. The batting average well over in a career in the 300s. The RBI totals, the doubles. He's an unbelievable worker. It kind of reminds you of what we see out here in L.A., Kobe Bryant, when it comes to working on his craft every single day. He's early batting practice, hitting off a tee, soft toss, early, you know, doing the batting practice routine every day. And this is a guy that's 36 now, that turned 37 years old. He will not skip a day as far as batting practice. So he works incredibly hard. I expect him to have another big season. And when you put in Luis Valbuena in that lineup, you know, Escobar was outstanding, you know, at third base hitting. You know, Cole Calhoun's an outstanding player. They really have, and then you pick up Danny Espinosa. Their offense is going to be great. Cameron Maben, Ben Revere in the outfield, you know, so they got a lot of speed. They got a lot of defense. Offense, you know, it's certainly not going to be an issue at all. It's going to be a lot of fun when they match up against all the, you know, the premium offensive teams in the American League.
No, you're right. They are going to be able to put up runs. We saw that last year. It was a strange year last year in which, you know, they win 74 games. But very, very streaky, right? And at times, man, they just go on these tears. And as you stated, you mentioned Alaska. There were a lot of positives down the stretch in the month of September. They won 8 of their last 10 baseball games. I'm interested to see if this carries over. There are some fresh faces here. Now, for the record, the projected win total for the Halos this year, 76.5, Mark. What do you think? You know, you think this is an improved ball club. It's all about the pitching, isn't it? Like, if they can stay healthy and just sort of gel, they can come together here.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of it. Like, even Fangraphs had them up around 84, 85 wins. I think anywhere between 84 to the 90 range, I think, is something this club is shooting for. Yeah, it comes down to their pitching health. And when you think about it, 74 wins last year with some of the performances that we saw, an MVP and Mike Trout, it's not acceptable for the organization. It's not acceptable for Artie Moreno, the owner. But when you lose three guys to Tommy John surgery, who's supposed to be part of your rotation, C.J. Wilson never even pitched the entire season.
Yeah.
So you had so many guys unavailable for you, and the depth in your minor league system wasn't as strong anyhow. It's getting better, especially at the lower levels. Not as much at the upper levels of the minor leagues, but it has developed a little bit more as far as the draft over the last couple of years under Billy Epler, who's done a nice job since coming over from the Yankees. It's going to be one of those seasons this year. Everyone expects, you know, the Red Sox to be unbelievable, and they should be, but you never know, and I think they'll be good. The Astros, the Rangers, the American League, the Toronto Blue Jays, the American League is so loaded with talent. I think the one division now that was so good just 2 years ago might take a slight step back would be probably the AL Central, although Cleveland is loaded, and they got some unbelievable pitching, and I think they've made some good moves, obviously taking Edwin Encarnacion away from the Jays, that they're going to be really good too. So, but I think that division itself is in a little bit of rebuilding mode, but the rest of the teams in the American League, boy, I'll tell you what, every team is so stacked, it's going to be a lot of fun to see. I don't anticipate and have a ton, if any, 100-win seasons from anybody because it's just too much balance.
I can't wait to do this thing. Mark, it's always a pleasure, man. I know you join us a couple of times a year. Every year we want to get you in before you start to get real busy covering the Angels. And I screwed the name up. I swear, man, if you put $1,000 on the table right now, I don't know. Is it the Los Angeles Angels? Is it the Los Angeles Angels of California, of Anaheim? I don't even know. Do you ever screw it up still?
You know what? No, we go with just the Angels. That's it.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I'm calling it the Halos.
There's always a way you could sneak around and just say, hey, the Angels.
Exactly.
And just go with it from there because there's no other sports team called the Angels, so you're all right there. You're all set.
Hey, Mark, you're the best, man. It's always a pleasure. Thanks for the time.
You got it, Gabe. Anytime, man.
There's Mark Gubas. We just love talking baseball with Mark Gubas. Paul Bovey joins us next. We talk NBA basketball. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Let's bring in Paul Bovey. Let's get right down to business. Went a little long with Mark Gubas there. Man, it's a pleasure talking baseball with Mark. Always a pleasure talking basketball with Paul Bovey. We got the Raptors and the Bulls on the board tonight. The point spread was 7. From what I understand, Ibaka will not be in the lineup for the Raptors this evening. And, of course, Terrence Ross will not be in the lineup for the Toronto Raptors this evening as Terrence Ross traded to the Orlando Magic for Serge Ibaka and a first-round draft pick. The Raptors give up their first-round draft pick, which will be in the late 20s, the Raptors hope. Let's bring in a Paul Bovey right now. We're going to talk about the trifecta of NBA games on the board this evening, but we've got to get Paul's take on this big deal. You know I'm a Raptors fan, Paul, and I'm also a longtime Serge Ibaka fan. Other than Paul Millsap, they really couldn't have done any better than this. It's not like everyone's available in the NBA right now. Millsap might be available if you're willing to give up a hell of a lot. Giving up Terrence Ross and a late first round draft pick for Serge Ibaka is a great freaking deal, in my opinion, for the Raptors.
I think it's a steal, Gabe. You're getting a guy, he's a 2.4 career blocks a game guy. Now, only 1.6 this year, but look, we all know that the Raptors are in dire need of defensive help. They are the third worst defensive team in the conference right now, behind the Knicks and the Philadelphia 76ers, 32-23. That is not the road to the championship. They have to do something to improve, and they had to do it immediately. And they did it. They accomplished it. And they brought in a guy who can spot up, shoot the three-point shot, and he's connecting at 36% from beyond the arc. This is a great trade for the Raptors, and if they could re-sign him, even better. But it's called win now, and they have a chance to do that.
No, you're exactly right. And even a picture we just showed head-to-head, the Raptors need toughness. Look at Ibaka. Look at Terrence Ross. Ross is all smiles. Ibaka's all business. See, exactly. Like, you need toughness. Like, look, the Raptors win the deal alone just looking at the picture right there. And T-Ross, a good kid. He's, you know, an explosive player, but he's not consistent enough, and he wasn't what the Raptors needed. There was issues with the Raptors, and, you know, there's some concern that their offense is becoming too ISO run with DeMar taking too many shots. You know, others are thinking that Lowry's got a problem with Casey. So this, you know, this brings them together. Actually, you know, the Raptors, I think, are in a decent spot tonight, just because Lowry melted off after the game the other night, and he's got to back it up. They blew a 16-point lead to the Pistons. But I'm not really interested in laying 7 here tonight, even with all the Bulls' injuries.
Well, the Bulls are 2-3 without Wade. And most of the time that he has sat out, it's been the second of a back-to-back. So this is a little bit different. They haven't been playing particularly good defense. Minnesota just from inside the arc the other night was 66%. But the Bulls did ring up 118 points twice without Wade in the lineup, a win against Charlotte and also against the Lakers. This game has the makings of going to the high side, and I think the numbers probably come down because Wade is out of the lineup. But Jimmy Butler, in two games that Dwayne Wade has missed, has went off for 52 points and 42 points. He's going to have to shoulder the burden tonight. Mrotic's out. McDermott will get more touches, but I think the game will probably go over the number 205.5.
And the Bulls absolutely own the Raptors. So Jimmy Butler's going to play tonight, huh? I wasn't sure if he was going to be locked in. We should mention the Bulls, 10-0 and 9-1. 10-0 straight up, last 10 against the Raptors, man. 9-1 against the spread as well. All right, Cavs and Wolves tonight. Cavs are laying 4. You know, the Cavs are... You know, I know they're not perfect, but they're on a little bit of a run right now. It's up to them. It's up to LeBron how interested he is on a nightly basis, how interested the entire team is on a nightly basis. T-Wolves, they blew out the Bulls, but hasn't been a very good homestand for them. They show flashes, but there's no consistency with the T-Wolves. Surprisingly enough, this is the highest total on the board tonight, even more so than the Kings and the Lakers. 219. Any take on this game?
They played about a week and a half ago, and it was like somebody flipped a switch at halftime because the Cavs outscored them. I think it was 62-37 en route to like a 126-97 win. Now, I look back last year, and collectively the Cavs are 138-259 from the field against the T-Wolves, and they've averaged 120 points. So if you're going to take the T-Wolves plus the 4 here, you got bigger cojones than me. I'm not saying they're not going to cover, but they'll cover without my money. You got to figure the Cavs will probably, and as you say, Gabe, if they're interested, pretty much name the score, and it's going to be up to the T-Wolves to outscore them.
You know, and it's funny, the T-Wolves are actually 7-0 as last 7 as a home dog. I cashed them getting points against the Raptors, but this is a different spot. But the Wolves are on a 9-0 overrun right now. Everyone thinks Thibodeau in defense, but 9 straight games have gone over. Cleveland on a 6-0 overrun right now, 8-2 to the over in their last 10 games. As you mentioned, when they meet up, the last 3 times that they they've played, all been track meets as well. I like the Cavs in the over in this game. And we got about 90 seconds, 1 minute left here. Kings and Lakers tonight. You know, stop the presses, man. The Kings have won three straight games. Kings have a hard time winning two games in a row, yet they've won three in a row. One of them very impressive without DeMarcus Cousins against the Boston Celtics. They've been very, very successful, man. They've won three straight in L.A., and they've won eight of the last nine against the Lakers. Lakers come home after that long road trip. What's your take?
When you think of the Kings, you do not think defensive prowess. But they did hold the Boston Celtics to 92 points, and they held Golden State to 98 in regulation before going on to that overtime win. So they're playing decent defense. They came back from the dead the other night against New Orleans, win the game, hold them to under 100. And the Lakers, their games have averaged like 228 points over the last six. So something's got to give here. Probably going to go to the high side if I'd have to say pick a total. As far as the side goes, I take a step back on this one.
217 seems like a fair number. All right, Paul, it's always a pleasure, my man. Thanks a lot for taking the time to be with us. We got to figure out, you know, I thought it used to be Tuesdays and Thursdays were the big NBA nights, but it seems like Monday's a pretty big NBA night. So I'm going to take a look at the schedule. We'll iron out the best NBA nights to join us twice a week, but it's always a pleasure, my man. Check out Paul's picks over at VegasInsider.com. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Gabe.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We're going to come back with our DK lineup of the day for the NBA as well as our plays of the day. All right, it's time for our DraftKings lineup of the day. Only three games on the board this evening. So we're going to focus in on Sacramento and Los Angeles a little bit, even though, ironically enough, Minnesota and Cleveland, the highest total of the night at 219. This one's right behind it at 217. Darren Collison, we've given you Collison in the past. We're going to give him again. He's getting to be a little bit pricey, but it's not like the Lakers play defense or anything like that, man. You've been paying attention to the Lakers over the last couple of weeks. Every game's getting into the high 220. Tonight's going to be a track meet. Collison's put up 124 DK points in the Kings' last three games. He shoots the ball 16 to 20 times a basketball game, and I don't think tonight is going to be any different. Speaking of this game, we're going to go with Sweet Lou Williams. Williams coming off the bench right now, but, you know, he's the microwave. Remember the old microwave on the Pistons? Well, he's the modern microwave. This dude heats up fast. Doesn't matter if he plays 25 minutes. He's going to give you 25 or 30 DK points. I think it's going to be a higher pace track meet style basketball game tonight at the Staples Center. Damare Carroll for the Toronto Raptors. $4,200. Pretty fair price for a player who's put up 24 or more DK points in three of the last four basketball games and 30 or more in two of four. We like Karl Anthony Towns. We got Tristan Thompson. Kyle Lowry. Hey, Kyle, you ran your mouth the other night. Back it up tonight, bro. Kyle Korver. I think Korver's in a nice spot here this evening with no Kevin Love. He's got an opportunity to bomb the threes. I had Michael Carter-Williams in my lineup, but he's out because Butler's in. Matt Barnes, utility. All right, we got to be quick with our plays of the day. Cleveland Cavaliers are going to beat the T-Wolves. We're going to lay it 4 points. We're going to go over 219. Sacramento Kings getting 2 points against the Lakers. Lakers are on the road. First game back home right now. We often see teams struggle when they get back home. I like the Kings here to win four in a row. That's right, I said it, four in a row. We're going to go over the 218.5 points with the Kings and the Lakers. St. Joseph's. I don't love this pick, but I think the number's a little bit too high. VCU's not blowing anybody out, and St. Joe's haven't been really been getting killed. Give me 16 points with St. Joe's. Let's go over $135.5. Florida and Auburn. We're going to take a home dog getting plus 10 on their home court. And finally, in closing, Florida and Auburn over $156.5. May the winners be yours.